All set?
Yes, sir.
All right, I will call to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Board of Supervisors for this Tuesday, February 5th, 2013, and ask that everyone join the board as we honor America with Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here, I've been working on my vocals, so one of these days I'm going to sing the national anthem for
you. Let me know when you're ready, and we'll stick it on the agenda.
I'm not missing my right time.
First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on any items that are on today's agenda. Is there anybody who would like to address a topic on today's agenda? Seeing no one moving immediately the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second for approval of minutes on January 29th. Any discussion? Corrections? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes are passed. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consent agenda. We have all items, and we have added utility permit 1343 and road closures 1342 and 1344.
Say that again, road closure.
Yep, 1342 and 1344.
I'll move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Okay. We have no public hearing items. We have no additional items. Agency reports, we have Angie Schreck here to present to us today on access. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Angie.
How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Thanks for coming to see us today.
Thank you. I didn't expect you to get through the beginning of the agenda so quickly.
You didn't happen to catch the NFL Honors Award. Jason Witten or something from Dallas Cowboys. Has done a great job with children and programs similar to Access in his community, and it was highlighted on NFL last night, and I thought of our program right here when I saw that.
I didn't see that. I sometimes don't watch a lot of sports, but that's great to hear.
And Angie, if you wouldn't mind, and maybe you're starting right here, but I wanted to make sure I understand that you were part of Story County and then left and then
yes.
came back. And was, if you could just go through
sure,
for us.
No. Yes, I wanted to explain why I'm back and how that all took place. I was at Access for about 9 years. And then this spring, I went to the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault and worked on some statewide SART sexual assault response team efforts. And then a lot of the changes to victim services started unfolding, and the director at Access, Shelley McQueenie, left this fall. So I decided to come back and assist in this process, and I'm excited to be back. I had worked in Story County at Youth and Shelter Services before that for about 5 years, and I live in Story County, so I am very excited to be working in this county again.
Okay.
Excuse me. I'll give a quick mid-year report on some highlights, and then I'm going to talk about the victim service restructuring a little more and what it's going to mean for Access. So far, mid-year, so since July 1st, we've served 184 unduplicated residents of Story County. We've served an additional 2,009 residents through our educational programming. Typically, that's where we find that we reach the largest number of people. Couple of groups that we've spoken to that are outside of the Ames and ISU area, the United Methodist Women at Colo, Beta Sigma Phi, or Phi, sorry, I don't know how to say all of the Greek terms, which is a social service sorority out of Cambridge. We've also done some. I'm just going to give a highlight of some groups we've spoken with that have a Story County-wide impact. We've spoken with the Story County Quality of Life Alliance. We've trained Story County SART officers. We've also had a chance to speak at the North Crest Assisted Living Facility, among many other presentations. A lot of them are ISU-focused and Ames community-focused. For shelter, we have provided over 1,700 nights of shelter during this mid-year. That's definitely on track for what we've been doing in the last few years. Our capacity overall is about 6,500 nights in a year's time. We typically aren't at capacity at all times because we have families that might be in a room and we don't fill up every single bed. We have people who have just experienced trauma, so sometimes they're in a room by themselves for a period of time. But we're on track to provide more shelter nights this year than we did the night before. And then as I talk about the restructuring, we're probably on track to provide even more shelter nights to Story County residents in the future years. We had submitted our asset funding request in the fall to reflect just kind of status quo services because we didn't have a lot of insight as to what services would look like in the next year. And so we do anticipate requesting more shelter money from all of the providers, county, city, and United Way. GSB is kind of out of that shelter pool of money for now. So I will go into a little more about what's occurred with our funding structure and our service structure to give you a little more insight onto that. Any questions so far?
That was where I was going to go, is just ask you, based
yes.
on some of the proposed changes at state level, if you could comment on that.
Sure. I understand that Shelley McQueenie was here this summer when information was just unfolding and when we got the map that gave us the direction as to how services needed to come together. I brought an adjusted map for you guys today, which is at your seats. We are the north central region of the state. There are six sections that the state has been divided into. So there are 20 counties that we have within our region. Greene County was cut out of our region early on in the process and has been added back in. Access has served Greene County for about 8 years, and they felt strongly that they wanted to remain close to our services, and so something that they did allowed them to come back into our area. What we've decided to do is let Fort Dodge be the one designated shelter facility that receives the victim service funding. So they will be the recipient of that grant from the Attorney General's office. The rest of the providers, which is Access out of Ames, Marshalltown, and Mason City, will split the rest of the region and apply for both sexual assault and domestic violence funds. Now that is in, contrast, or it is in opposition with what was originally recommended by the AG's office. The AG's office wanted to see one sexual assault provider covering the entire region, one domestic abuse provider covering the entire region. They've loosened up some of those recommendations since then throughout many community conversations, throughout conversations with us. They still, I think, have a preference for that model, but they are also open to a number of models that agencies like ours can come up with that, number one, still separate the services. So, for example, Access will be covering Greene, Boone, and Story County still. Mason City will take the northern half of the region, and Marshalltown will kind of wrap around Access. So Webster County, Hamilton County, Hardin County, Grundy County, Marshall County, and Tama County will all be covered by the Marshalltown Project. And every county above that will be covered by the Mason City Project. They have quite an expanse for their services. What they are really requiring and really holding firm on is that even if agencies are providing both domestic violence and sexual assault services, that they find a way to separate them so that advocates aren't providing both sides of those services. And I agree with that. After working at the state level and seeing some of the information that was out there about how advocacy can sometimes be railroaded by, you know, the crisis that's always in front of us instead of necessarily focusing on getting out there and making concerted efforts to target the population that you want to serve. So that is our plan. Our plan is also to do a lot of regional work with our partners so that we can have a regional hotline, regional training efforts, regional plans and MOUs to make sure that we can all have equitable services, because that was another concern of the AG's office, is that sometimes you would have a few counties up in one area that didn't have strong services, and you would have a few counties that did have strong services. So really, we're going to work together to make sure that all of us have really consistent services, so that no matter where a victim is within our region, they're getting services that look similar.
Yeah, I asked a question. In each region under this format, is there a contact person that will have direct communication with the AG's office in terms of how things are progressing? Have you, or is that something that has been requested?
It hasn't been identified, and I haven't heard that it's been requested. We will, you know, the directors of the agencies will still have direct communication. Is that what you were thinking?
Right,
okay, yeah.
Right,
we'll
right.
still have direct communication with the AG's office. We'll all still have membership with the Coalition Against Domestic Violence and the Coalition Against Sexual Assault. So there won't be a lack of information going out or going back to them. So that being said, what we're planning to do to comply with the AG's recommendations is kind of all figured out, and we're in strong agreement within our region. We're lucky within our region. There are regions in this state who have decided to just basically compete until the very end and see who's left standing. There are also regions that are planning to subcontract. Our region has decided that we feel like it's better to just go in with our applications, let the contracts go to all of the agencies, rather than to have confusing subcontracting going on when really it won't reduce the cost of the services, and it may make things more confusing in the long run. With that said, though, we do believe that we want to still have a shelter here in Story County, and we've heard a lot of feedback that Story County still wants to have a shelter service. We believe that even though the state has made a case that shelter services can sometimes overpower outreach services, we don't believe that that's been the case for Access. We have a lot of community partners that really expect a lot of us and enhance our services. For example, the SART system here in Story County is very strong. We've never felt like we have had a lack of sexual assault services here. In fact, sometimes we feel more pressure from those community partners to make sure that our outreach services are really strong, and sometimes we may have had a hard time making sure that we're giving enough resources to the shelter services. So we are gathering up local funds. We are planning to increase our ability to fundraise in the near future. We are, like I said, we're going back to the asset funders and asking for more, and I do have a number for you as to what we will be asking for Story County. We're preparing that budget and plan to get that to you guys by the end of this week. Number.
I think we're planning to receive that report next week, I believe it is, isn't it? Yeah.
I met with Jean Cressy of United Way last week, and she gave me some direction as to not only what numbers to show you, which means we're redoing some of the asset budget pages, but also some narratives, so that will all definitely be in front of you next week.
And so that I'm clear, Angie, this will be a request in addition to what asset has already.
So the county already gave us $7,300 in our shelter specific allocation, and we'll be requesting an additional $9,061. Total, with all of the asset funders, we're requesting and in need of $36,000 more. And we are basing the distribution on the current distribution. For example, the city gives us a larger amount for shelter funds, and so we are asking them for approximately $16,000 in contrast to the $9,000 that we're asking you for in addition.
But that does match up with the percentages that asset has already awarded. So
yes.
You said 7,300 for us, right. So that would mean that the city was more like what?
And 11, something in that range, yes.
Okay.
When I was at the asset hearing in early January, I roughly estimated 30. Tried really hard to keep it at 30, but we're just kind of realizing that 36 is our magic number right now. We are keeping costs as low as we possibly can. We are keeping one full-time advocate dedicated to shelter with the support of administration and our volunteer coordinator, and then to staff the shelter to the best ability. We are going to have two AmeriCorps individuals at a full-time basis, and then we have our part-time overnight staff available. So we're going to do our best to make that model work in the next year. We anticipate that we're going to continue to need this level of support from the asset funders for shelter services, and we may have to reassess in the next year to see if, for example, the model using AmeriCorps volunteers, to see if that's the best model. We want to try for the most cost-effective approach, but we also know that we have to make something that we can consistently rely on and works best for the shelter residents that we're serving.
And so this additional 36 across the board from all funders,
yes,
that is in order to keep a shelter open in,
yes,
Story County.
Right. Yes.
And so I just encourage you when you come back and make the formal request, I'll want to hear what Story County looks like without a shelter. And so if you can just have that information, that would be helpful.
Okay. It's a good question. Interesting question. Anything else that I can tell you guys about this morning?
No, I just think that based on earlier this few months back when we had the opportunity to have that meeting and understand what the direction that the state was proposing and hearing the tremendous outcry from the community in support of the quality programs that we have, that this is certainly something that I hope all of us as stakeholders will take a strong look at how we can preserve an outstanding program that provides a very needed service in the community. Now, that's not to say that we might be able to meet every financial request, but we certainly will try to do what we can to be supportive of that. I would hope that will be the position that each of the funders would put towards this, because it certainly has proven to be very, very much needed, and I think you folks have demonstrated tremendous fiscal restraints over the years, and that's really been appreciated.
Thank you.
And Angie, just one question on the numbers that you gave us for. I want to make sure I'm clear on them. You indicated 184 residents of Story County in the first 6 months that had been served?
Yes, that had been served in our direct services.
Okay.
And then the other 2,000 in our educational services.
Okay. And just over 1,700 room nights, I think I heard you say,
yes,
so far in this
mid-year. Yes.
Do we have a breakdown of how many of those room nights were occupied by residents of Story County versus from
our county? Those are the Story County numbers. That 1,700 is Story County specific.
And so if I look at that and I figure it's just going to double to 3,500, mm-hmm, that's close to accurate as we look at this?
That year is close to accurate. And in the next year, we anticipate it going up even more. With Story County money being the main contributor to shelter, we will have the ability to say we have a certain number of beds that are reserved for Story County residents. We're turning people away from everywhere on a daily basis. So we hope to reduce the amount of Story County residents that we would be turning away at all in the next year.
Okay, and how many beds do you have available on any one night?
We have 1,800 beds. I'm sorry, 18 beds.
1,800 a week.
Wow.
18 beds available on any one night.
But almost never do we fill all of those for the reasons you indicated,
yes,
before.
Yes. It happens, but it's short-term if it happens.
How many rooms are there?
There are a total of 9 rooms.
9 rooms, 18 beds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another number, and I don't need this number today, but another number that I'll have interest in is, what does it cost if we break down the cost of per bed, per room, per year? What would it cost Story County if we wanted to fund a room or a bed or if there's a way to break it down and give us those numbers? I know we do that with Mary Greeley, Wayne, and some of our mental health. And
okay.
So just another way to look at it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Next is DHS. And you don't look like Pat Penning, Darren. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Hey, and before we get started, I don't know if you had heard this or not, but at this point in our preliminary budget, we have in fact approved a new phone system for Story County. We've asked that DHS be included in all of that. So nothing's done till it's done, but that's where we stand as of today.
Fantastic. I would love to participate in that process, and I'm sure Pat would put me as a point person so that we could ensure that we maximize the local administrative expense reimbursement for the county. Pretty much our update is fairly straightforward. Again, I'm Darren Thompson. I'm filling in for Pat. I'm the community liaison for the department. out of the Des Moines service area, which is the 15-county area that we cover, including Story. We're fully staffed still at our office over here in Ames with 34 today, and that does not include some of the ancillary groups that are a part of us as well, DCAT, Promise Jobs, and other ones that are involved in our work as well with family team meetings and so forth. It's been fantastic having the second floor smaller conference room available to us now. That's helped to facilitate family team meetings and give us a much more confidential location and privacy for the family during difficult times whenever we're asking them to do things and talking with them.
And we have Caitlin, our DCAT coordinator, responsible for scheduling that room. Is that
correct? That is correct. She is handling it with the family team meeting facilitator, Jessica, so things are going very well so far with that. So
okay.
Very much appreciate that.
And I would ask, and I'll say something to Caitlin as well, but if you wouldn't mind, since Caitlin works more directly for you than she does for me, I would like, when that room's available for our county attorney, to have access to that room. I want you guys to have first choice. It was set up to be the family team meeting, but there are occasions that our county attorney, specifically the people who reside over in the HCS, need access to a smaller conference room, and it just seems to me that if it's sitting vacant at a time they need it, that should be allowable, if you wouldn't mind visiting.
Absolutely.
With her.
Whenever I go back today, I'll mention that to her. Child welfare as a whole, our group care numbers continue to review those and approvals on a weekly basis. We're currently doing a study with regards to the differential response for child abuse referrals. This is something interesting that hopefully as we progress through the process and gain some understanding and then look to potentially implement this statewide will certainly help with keeping families together as long as possible. That gets back to our process that we're working on right now, which is the statewide RFP for the parent partner approach. That's something also that falls under the CPPC initiative, the Community Partnership for Protecting Children, and something that Caitlin, of course, our DCAT coordinator, is working towards as well. Again, a statewide initiative, its goal is to directly help parents with parents that have been in the system and who have successfully reunified with their family. And the goal is really that safety, permanency, and well-being of the children, with the end goal being the reunification in a much more efficient and effective manner for long-term sustainable permanency. So those are things that are happening today as far as the child welfare system as a whole. CPPC, I just mentioned that briefly. Caitlin's been doing a really fantastic job. She's coming up on her six-month review with the DCAT group, and hopefully we'll be doing that at the next meeting. She's met with the ISU campus student group a couple times, the Kiwanis Club of Nevada here, Ames Police Department, several other different things, FACES event. She's currently working on a program that I know she's pretty proud of, and I think the CPPC Shared Decision-Making Team is as well here for the Prevent Child Abuse Month coming up in April. So we're pretty excited about that.
But she seems to be doing a really nice job.
She is. You know, as somebody who is very young and energetic, she is showing certainly us more mature individuals, perhaps, both physically and mentally.
You're not talking to me, are you?
No. You're the one with gray hair, sorry.
That's point true.
That out. She's doing a fantastic job of encouraging us to move forward with some different ideas, and so injecting a new set of ideas and thoughts out there has really helped, I think, as all. We continue to have our CPPC group sponsoring and providing financial support through LSI, for the crisis child care for, again, this year. And that runs through the grant that we have. And that will end, I think, in September again. So that's really the core of everything. We're continuing to support the same contracts we have before. Of course, our support of asset has been going very well. And, of course, Pat Penning, she sets on that. So I don't have a whole lot of information about that. We have the individualized services for families, again, with that goal of that permanency and trying to get the family back together as quickly as possible to reduce costs overall. Then we have the Girls Weekend Offender Program with JCS, a great program that has been successful in the past. And then, of course, our family team meeting facilitator, Jessica Culp, does a fantastic job. And, of course, that room has been tremendously helpful in the process overall. So caseloads continue to be steady or increasing overall. We're always looking for ways to try and do more with less, knowing all the situations that we're faced with. So caseloads are running very high at times, to the point where we're really struggling. So we certainly appreciate that. Several individuals throughout our Des Moines Service Area group, and in particular out of the Polk County area, will be participating and have been slated and pulled out for the Affordable Care Act. And that is something that we're continuing to work towards. Our group is always tapped, usually first, just simply because we have a lot of pretty smart people, and we're pretty proud of that. Unfortunately, though, then that gets back to our caseload and the increase in caseload and those having to kind of pick up the slack. So it's a good thing, but all the programs have been going very well so far. Any questions or anything in particular that maybe I didn't cover that Pat usually covers? Okay. Anything else? And we are super excited about the phone system.
Yeah, and you'll be working with our IT department just as we move through the process, make sure that, that you're getting the information you need, because we do want you included, and we want to increase the increase the support that's coming from you as well as part of it.
Kenny has done a fantastic job so far, and we've once we've gotten him the data, he's provided us with some just good feedback. So I'm anxious to get started on the next
good.
Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Nope. Okay. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. No departmental reports, liaison assignments, and committee meeting updates.
Pass.
Went to the McCallsburg City Council meeting last night. They have an interest in turning back the control of two blacktops that go through town, E18 and S27. I think it was in 2004 they took control of those from the county. They've reduced the speed limit on the east-west road, and they've also put up a stop sign on that east-west road. But they do have a interest in turning that control of that back to the county. I did inform them that we couldn't, at this point, make any promises that the stop sign and the speed limit would stay. The county does not have an ordinance or a mechanism to enforce that 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, so that would take an action by this board to recognize that speed limit and also the stop sign. Their concern with the stop sign is that there's a large number of children that live on the north side of that blacktop, and that is the street that they typically walk down to get to the elementary school, which is in McCallsburg. So they've got a real real concern about that. So I think that's probably something we'll see on our agenda here and have a discussion about it. And I think they're kind of waiting to hear from us what our intention is before they decide what they want to do. So
okay. And then I think I heard that the mayor of Collins was up there pitching a program he's talking
right.
about starting.
Right. They've got some. It's an interesting program that that Brett Comgees from Collins presented last night to the city council about some services that he's willing to offer as far as assisting not just McCallsburg but any of the smaller towns, specifically in the eastern half of the county with a capital improvement plan or even an administrative review. The city of Collins learned that once they started to apply for some federal grants that there were some things that they had to do housekeeping-wise in order to be eligible for those grants. So he's a self-made expert in a lot of that stuff. And
well, we've seen what he's done with the Wellness Center,
right.
Wayne down in Collins. I know you
but
saw
it's
that.
It's not unusual for individual to take a lead or be kind of the go-to person and as a think tank for these type of grants.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, you form these out to some of the community development entities, but I don't know if Eastern Story County has had as much of an opportunity as more central. So, you know, this would be something that would be at least worthy to explore further and learn more about, you know, the process. And I guess the feeling would be is what about, you know, if the other communities in that area see this as a positive step for them. I don't know why we would necessarily, you know, want to discourage that, because I think it enhances part of what we have talked about in terms of how can we reach out to the smaller communities and assist them as they, you know, plan for future growth and development.
So. Yeah, and my expectation, and what, Paul, I don't know if you got the same impression, is that Brett is planning on coming before us to make a request that we participate in funding these things for the smaller towns. He's presented it to me informally. I told him that he needed to go out and see if there was interest in it and then put something formal together to bring to the three of us at a public meeting. But I would fully expect that to be coming to us.
I would think it would be sooner than later. The McCallsburg City Council signed a sort of a non-binding letter of intent, and I believe tomorrow night he goes before the Roland City Council. And I don't know if he's on the agenda yet for Maxwell, but he's had some interest from over there. So,
well, and that's what Ziering and some of the, you know, Ziering is getting really active in applying for some of these grants. And what they found is they were lacking some of these documents. I talked to the mayor of Cambridge yesterday about this topic, and you know, Scott DeYoung, who kind of marks the beat of his own drum most of the time. He says, well, we've never wanted to apply for those grants, so we never needed them. But if we want to apply for the grants, we absolutely have to go down the road of getting these things created. So I would expect it's something we're going to hear more about.
Okay.
None from me. Anything else?
Nope.
All right, other reports. Discussion of the FY14 budget as we completed our work sessions.
Good.
My hero, Lisa Markley.
Okay, how do you spell that with a capital H? I was just wondering.
And Jamie Larson, he tells me at the basketball game, Jamie Larson says, why are you his hero?
I hope you told him.
I sure did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we did complete the budget work sessions. Thank you for putting up with me for, you know, a week and a half solid. January 9th through 22nd, anybody wants to listen to those are all out on the website on the audio. We were able to put together a budget that, in the salary arena, the current staffing, including vacants, with a 2% increase for regular, 2% for union, also includes the compensation plan implementation, which I know is really important to moving forward on the HR side, and the compensation board recommendation of 2% for elected officials at this point in time. Obviously, the public hearing is when you're going to, well, I don't think we've gotten the compensation, we'll keep on that. You'll have to approve, disapprove, redo, yeah, whatever you need to do on those that night.
But fair to say, 2% across the board,
right, pretty
at
much
the county is what's
right
coming before us.
Mm-hmm. The budget in front of you includes three positions that were approved out of the four requested. We're increasing full-time to... increasing to full-time the part-time position to animal control. That will begin July 1st. I think she wants to start May 1st, so I think we're going to go early on that one. A full-time position beginning March of FY14 for conservation for the Dakins Lake opening, and full-time case manager in mental health community services. At this point in time, I think... the case management, as I state later in my review, that we are moving that to the general supplemental fund. There is offsetting revenues. So that's where we're at on that. Dollars have been earmarked for capital improvement plan, $37,800 for that. Economic development uses for grants of $37,000 for that. Increased funding for economic development and CPAD implementation, $100,000 for that. And phone system upgrade. Those are the biggies. General and supplemental funds, which are combined for budgeting and reporting, have expenses of $21,683 more than the revenues.
I'm sorry, would you say that again?
$21,683 more than revenue.
Okay.
The overall budget shows revenues exceeding expenditures by $364,000.
Really?
Say
that one again? I wasn't sure about that. 364. Okay, you've been here, and I don't want to give anything away. How many times has this happened?
I started when I was three.
Yeah.
I've been here 18 years,
And I have in front of me the budget book for 18 years, and I did verify again this morning before I came here that, yes, there has never been a year when the revenues have exceeded the expenditures since I've been here in the starting the 95 budget. So
I need to stop right here and just, Wayne, Paul, congratulate the two. I mean, this is something clearly that Wayne, the first time we met, I was talking about stuff like this. But without the two of you really stepping up, and Wayne, in your case, embracing kind of a different way of looking at things and going through it, and Paul, for you, kind of as we came in together, kind of asserting that this was going to be a priority for us, this is not easy to do. There's a reason that most counties don't get this done. There's a reason that most governmental entities don't get this done. And so I want to publicly, Wayne, thank you, and Paul, thank you for you guys pushing this through for us to get here. I mean, this is a big deal, and it wouldn't happen, Wayne, without your leadership, and Paul, without you buying in, that this was something that was important to get done. So thank you. And sorry to interrupt.
Well, once in a while, a sensible approach can be arrived at, and if it's articulated well, I can be, as stubborn as I am, I can at least take time to listen to it, and it did sound like it was a direction that was within reach, and the rationale for being there was certainly a sound fiscal accountability, and I think we all, we have to also thank the elected officials.
Absolutely.
And department heads, because they bought in with the philosophy that we were talking about, and I think it really was a united team effort. So.
Oh, everybody, absolutely, but it has to start with the Board of Supervisors if we're going to get there, and one voice on the Board of Supervisors does not accomplish a whole heck of a lot. It takes a lot more than that. Lisa, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was your direction to me at the beginning. This is what my goal is. So the big picture was there the whole time to be able to work toward. Case management is being budgeted in this general / supplemental fund for FY14. So that means our general dollars, our expenses overall are higher, which requires a higher 25% ending fund balance, because if the expenses are higher and that's what we base our ending fund balance on, that just makes sense. The mental health fund, which is now the county services fund, according to my new budget documents. Yeah, that was interesting. Assuming paying the state bills of about 1.4, that's a moving target, obviously, because they change what we owe rapidly. It will be a
for the
negative,
better or for the worse.
Yeah, well, it depends on the day. Will be a negative $651,000 at the end of this FY. I'm not going to budget for an ending fund balance of a negative because, I don't want to get my hand slapped.
Well, there's still the possibility of transition funds.
Yeah.
At whatever level.
Right.
And I know that our representative, Lisa Heddens, is pushing hard for the $20 million in the transition fund, which, if that were to come to fruition, would more than take care of the $651. I actually got a phone call last night from representative on my side of the aisle, Dave Dio, who is actually on the Appropriations Committee, and he indicated that they were looking at it more from the $11.8 million standpoint, which is less than the 20, but substantially more than the 3.8 that Governor Branstad recommended. And as I understand the breakdown of that, if it was 11.8, that would just get us to the 651.
Correct.
That you're assigning here. So I think it's reasonable at this point, based on what we know, to think that negative 651 is not truly going to be negative 651. It may be zero, but that's where my expectation is, at least at this point, from what I know.
Yeah, it would be a good thing if the House Republicans would compromise to that figure. I understand from the information that I'm getting from our lobbyists and others that there's no guarantee, but yet there is good discussion. They're having ongoing discussion to try to look at the overall fiscal impact to counties, particularly the 31 or 32 that requested transition funds, and what this would mean And so I think there are, and then we also have several new legislators this year that were county officials at one point, and so they're able to bring a lot better perspective as to what this impact would be. So I do think that there's a likelihood of something happening, but I certainly would hope that the 11.8 would be, we wouldn't go any lower than that. If obviously the 20 is what we need, or and that's just to deal with all the counties that have requested dollars. So, but I think we could adjust with whatever we get. There's anything, it's going to be better than nothing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you.
Is are they looking to local officials as opposed to another DHS recommendation of some sort?
I think it rests completely with the House of Representatives right now. I think ultimately my sense is that the Senate is, unless the House comes back with something that the Senate deems unreasonably low, which I would say is probably the original DHS recommendation or even up to what the governor recommended, that the Senate will buy in. And so that to me means if the House Republicans truly are going to come forward to 11.8, it means to me that it's going to be somewhere between 11.8 and 20 million is where you're going to end up. I don't see any way. There was one proposal to go above the 20 million. I don't see any way that's going to happen.
I don't see that's going to happen either.
But it also feels like that they're setting a floor of 11.8. So.
Yeah, and this will be, we'll hear more about this tomorrow, Lisa. I was going to mention in my closing comments, but the supervisor's statewide meeting is tomorrow.
Okay.
Tonight we'll hear from our lobbyists and we'll hear from, you know, all of those regarding what movements they are seeing at that particular level. But I think there is a lot of optimism that there's going to be certainly some adjustments. Now, whether it's going to be exactly the dollar amount we'd like, I wouldn't hold my breath on that.
Right.
I do have a positive outlook.
But, you know, the original 11.8 at least gives us 700 and some thousand.
Gets us back. Where we're slightly above water, but we're above water.
Right. So, yeah, so those numbers, I'm going to use the 1.4 as assigned, the whatever I need to get to basically zero so that I don't have a negative ending fund balance in our budget proposal, obviously.
And are we still, would it be a good move for us if the state would say that what we owe, we wouldn't have to pay back all in this fiscal year if we could extend that in over 2 years?
Oh, yeah, I mean, because really, the way it's looking right now, without going negative, we will not be able to pay it all in one year.
I mean, that's the conversation that I'm having with people at the State House. That
and obviously,
they're willing to
when they don't make a decision until April or May, and we don't get the money until June.
Absolutely.
You know.
Okay.
So, you know, all that is just awesome. And on top of that, the levy rate is going down 2 cents. Overall, the revenues are 2.5% lower than the FY13 budget, and expenditures are 9.9% lower than the FY13 budget. I'm going with original budget in these dollars, okay?
Okay.
I've got a fund balance comparison for you there. Our goal, according to our policy, is 25% for the general, which is the general and supplemental together. We're at 23.4, really close.
And last year now, just so we all remember, our original budget last year, we were right at 20%.
Right.
Yes. So we were substantially less.
Right.
So we're making progress on this. But one of the things I want to point out that I'm really proud of, Lisa, and maybe you can address this, is if you look at FY08, FY09, and FY10, we had total ending fund balance, all our ending funds combined together, 5.6 million, 4.6 million, and 6.0 million, and that actually extended through FY11, and that's all on original budget. And again, we've increased that 8.4 the first year that we took a swipe at a budget. 8.2 last year was where we had it budgeted, and this year we've got over $10 million budgeted as being available in our ending fund balance at the end of the year, which I would think is going to ultimately help us with these percentages, help us stay closer. As you said, when our budget goes up, our to get to 25% also goes up. So we got to recognize
correct.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Our the re-estimating, I always talk really, I am very adamant to the departments that I need re-estimated numbers as best we can. When we're halfway through a budget year, we can see easier how much our fuel, our utilities, our types of things that are more market-driven than they are, our ability to say yes or no to. I'm pretty pleased with our re-estimations. We're coming in at almost 25, almost 26% in our FY13 budget for re-estimation. So that's good. And I don't feel like the departments are restricted and not able to do the things that they need to do. But I just feel like by looking at the real cost of some of the things, it's helping a lot with where we're at in the ending fund balance.
Well, you make a great point there. I had somebody ask me yesterday, because I am I'm very proud of what we've done here, and so I'm talking about it a lot. And I had somebody ask me, my goodness, you're down 9% in spending this year, a lot of which can be accounted for in mental health. But they said, you guys have found a way to get this budget balanced. What did you cut? And I went through and I said, we really didn't cut any services. We didn't cut any programs. We increased what we spend on secondary roads. We increased what we're spending in economic development. We really didn't cut anything. We just got a little sharper pencil and started really holding. We had buy-in from all our elected officials and all our department heads and really all the way down to staff that this is the way we're going to do things. And so we've been able to do this without slashing what the people of Story County are getting from Story County. So I think kudos are in order.
We did see an increase in valuations. That is a plus, and that obviously helps us out too. Countywide was 5% increase on the final numbers that Stacy submitted, and rural was 6.8. I guess that's where we're at this year. I don't know what's going to happen with property tax reform. I don't know what's going to happen with the ability to actually use all those dollars in the upcoming years, but this year we're making hay with it, I guess you could say.
Well, you make hay with it, but you also, by setting a budget like this, you increase your flexibility when something unforeseen happens
right,
down the road.
Right. So we are, like I said, we're at two cents lower. The countywide is at 2 cents lower. The rural services is at 2 cents lower than last year.
When do we see all the city budgets and school budgets? When do they have to be submitted?
All the budgets, with the exception of school budgets, are due March 15th in our office.
Are due March 15th? Because I think I saw that Ames, which I know they've got, they're up 14 cents, and I know there's multiple reasons for that, but I thought I saw Gilbert was going up. My expectation is that we're going to see, generally, everybody else in the county going up, and we found a way to go down 2 cents. And so I think that's something that's really important as well.
We are, as you said, giving additional or more dollars to secondary roads. We did find a way to do that. We are giving the enough to be able to be eligible for state road use tax funds, which is obviously a goal when we start the budget. We're a little over 75% of the requirement there. So. Any other questions? You have the numbers
great job.
In front of you?
You're still my hero.
And I was going to find out something. I just got an email from Bill Peterson from ISAC, and it was talking about some of the proposed legislation that is going on right now, and they list some projected figures. I'm going to shoot that email to you so that you can see what impact, if any, if this goes forward, and I just got it, and I didn't have time to really...
A property tax reform one, you mean?
I think it's probably, it's all tied into that, yes. But he just sent that out yesterday, so I'll try to shoot that email to you.
Okay, good.
What I'm going to do, if you guys are, if you don't have any additional questions, you don't have any additional things you want me to tweak a little bit. I'm planning on coming next week and saying to you, I want to send it for publication as it is, if you like it. At that point in time, and then on the 19th, we will want to be handing back, having a staff meeting to hand back the budget, final budgets, and then make sure everybody's on board with what we're sending. That's typically, we try to include that into a department head and elected officials meeting, which I think Alyssa has already tentatively put on the calendar. So I guess I'll work with her to find out what time you want to do that meeting, and that will be the budget handback plus. I mean, I can't see bringing them in just for budget handback, so we might as well make it worthwhile and have some other things on the agenda. And then on the 22nd, I'll go ahead and send it on, and we'll plan on a March 14th public hearing, if that's okay with you guys. But at this point in time, I just wanted to update you as to where we were and make sure everybody was satisfied with it. And I was still a hero.
You're still a hero. And all joking aside, I know, Lisa, I recognize that I'm not always easy to work with, that I'm fairly laser focused when I decide something's going to happen. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you've taken time for me all the way through, and sometimes patted me on my head and sent me on the way if I had a stupid suggestion, but I appreciate how hard you worked to help us get here. So thanks.
Good.
All right. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to make comments on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action on those comments due to requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Is there anybody who would like to address the board on any topic? All right. Seeing no one, moving to the microphone. Announcements from the supervisors.
Just as I've mentioned briefly, tomorrow will be the statewide supervisors meeting in Ankeny, and we have an excellent agenda. We have representatives from the state legislature coming for a briefing, particularly on property tax update and anything that is happening with fuel tax. And then several will be there for a luncheon that we can interact with. And so we're looking forward to a good full day of discussion. And then we'll be also planning for our march for spring school as well. So that'll take place actually tonight when we'll start planning for that. So,
I'll be at the meeting in Ankeny tomorrow as well. So
yep. And, Wayne, we appreciate all the work you put in on behalf of the supervisors statewide. My intent is to probably get that. Depends. I'm going to go to the state capitol in the morning. Actually, Civil Attorney Reynolds and I are going to go down and listen to Deb's presentation and the other presentations on mental health. And then my hope, depending on how long that takes, is that I can get down to Ankeny sometime around lunchtime. And then I've got actually a meeting that I've got to head back up to Huxley for in the mid-afternoon. The whole Ballard School District is looking at bringing back the Ballard Business Association.
Sure.
Defunct for a few years, but it fits in with our conversations about economic development. So, Wayne, my intent is to be there as much as possible, but we'll see how the schedule goes during the day.
Great.
Anything else?
Nope.
All right, next item on our agenda, speaking of Civil Attorney Reynolds, is closed session. Under Iowa Code Section 21.51C. And Jessica, if you want to take us through that.
Absolutely. This is a request by the County Attorney's Office to go into closed session to discuss strategy with civil counsel regarding imminent litigation.
I would move that we adjourn this meeting and move into closed session at the at counsel's advice.
Second.
Motion and a second.
Two. Aye.
Clinton, aye.
Sanders, aye. We're taking a 5-minute recess and we'll go into closed session.
Okay.
All right, we are reconvening our open session at 11:25 a.m. And Jessica, please report on what you can report.
Well, at this point, there was no action taken by the board in closed session, and the matter that we discussed that is confidential under open meetings law will be a matter that my office will continue to keep the board updated on as there are any developments.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Seeing no other issues, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All.
Roll call vote. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Sanders. Aye. We're adjourned. Thanks, Wayne.
Only because.
I'm going to do roll call vote all the way through. So.
All right.
I didn't shoot it on my really, really